It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, this is going to be fun. You're going to actually like this.
Mm.
We're going to do a scene.
Oh, okay.
I had an idea at one of those, like, wow, the first time this ever happened must have been, like, amazing. So I want it. I know other people have done, like, the internet is full of, like, oh, the first time it, like, I'm stealing from Ryan George and some earlier crack stuff, whatever. But the idea popped into my head today, and I'm like, that must have been cool. And so I want to, like, play this out. So, no spoilers for you. You're not the main character anyway. So, you're the Smothers brother that has the mustache. But we are playing two prehistoric humans. Now, not like cave people. Like, this is prehistory. Like, we've got textiles. We live in buildings, crap like that, you know, probably. That kind of vibe.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Sure.
What do you want your name to be?
Bill.
Bill. All right. Getting very method with it, I see. All right. Then I'll be Tony. How about?
Right. Sure.
So, hey, Bill.
Yes, Tony.
I discovered the coolest. I figured out the coolest thing.
Oh, tell me about it.
So, you probably don't remember. I mean, I don't remember this, but, like, I don't know if your folks ever told you, like, back in the day with meat, they just would, like, stick it on a stick and put it in the fire.
Yes.
And, I mean, we do that every once in a while, like dad's birthday or whatever. But, like, you know, now we've gotten into, like, pots and, like, you know how, like, Lucy, when she cuts open the meat and we take the fat part out and you use some of that and you put it in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the meat goes in there and it's way, I think it's way
better. I think it's better too, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you heard, but Lucy's, I don't know what she got. The person that knocked up Lucy that one time. That's why they have the kid.
Oh.
That guy. He got an idea. And he took a bunch of the fat from one of the oxes that we weren't using to haul stuff. And he melted it down. And then he put the meat like in it, like submerged in it. And it was really good. Like he let it get really hot and then he did that and it's very tasty. I highly recommend you check it out. It uses up a lot of fat, but you know, we can reuse it. We can just leave the fat sitting there for, I'm sure, ever, and it'll be fine. And you just heat it up again. Whatever. Anyway. So, you know the thing where Frank took the it's complicated, but he takes the corn, he mushes it, and he mixes it with the water and all that, and then he put it in the pan, and you get the little, I think we're calling them cakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good too.
I like very that. Tasty. Yeah, I love those.
I've combined a lot of this together. I took the liquidy ooze that turns into cakes.
Okay.
And I take the meat. Speaking of which, actually, I'm not even... Sorry, we have to pause this because my computer has decided right now it's when it's gonna do a scan.
What's a computer?
Sorry. All right, anyway, I took the goop that makes the cakes and I took the meat, which, by the way, I didn't use the ox. I know we all like the ox. The new one they brought in with the horns, he's smaller, he's got the really fucked up eyes. I think that might be the greatest of all time. I don't know what we're going to call that animal yet, but I want to make a lot of them and eat them. anyway, I took the goop and then I heated up the fat and then I dunked the meat in the goop and then put it in the fat. And it gets like crispy. But like super juicy. And it's just the tastiest thing. And the stuff inside is all not bloody, which is how we like it these days. But it's still like real tender and it's real fast. It wasn't in there for very long.
So when fat turns into a liquid, like you're talking about when you melt it, hot. How does the stuff you put in there, how does it not burn up?
I don't know. You don't put it in too long. You can put it in too long and then it gets nasty.
You have to. How do you? Ooh, so you really have to be clever to take it out at the right time.
Just trial and error. I know we haven't got a good demarcation yet, but I actually scratched some spots outside of my house, and the sun, you know, when the sun goes about, the shadows go about this far is how long it is. It's really good. I'm gonna eat all of my foods like this now.
Oh, you're gonna dip them in the.
Dip them in the goop.
Corn goop. And then
put them in the... Yeah. Oh. Seriously, when you taste it, it's nothing you realize. Absolutely amazing.
Someone needs to invent dipping sauce.
Scene. The follow-up scene to this is actually mankind's first heart disease, first fatty liver. Because seriously, the person who figured out battering, and I assume deep frying was figured out, and then somebody figured out battering. Right. The person who figured out battering and deep frying must have been the happiest person in the world for like 2 weeks, and then they died. I'm not positive what they died of, but there are several options on the table.
I wonder if anybody knows how that process came about or who thought of that or whatever.
I figure it must have been old. I mean, I figure you probably accidentally dropped some or like, honestly, here's how I picture it. I picture the process very similar to what I have heard the process is for anyone who's ever bought a deep fryer. Which is that you try it out and then you're like, what else can we put in here? And you basically deep fry everything in your home and figure out what you like. So at some point, somebody had bread or a cake or something and they deep fried it and they're like, this is awesome. And then somebody was like, what if we coated the outside of the meat with it? And then they're like, this is even more awesome.
What do you think came first? Baking something like some meat inside of a carbohydrate or frying it inside?
Probably baking, but I'm not sure I could explain why I think that. I'm a little sad that you let my greatest of all time joke just slide by there. I thought that was pretty good.
What? Maybe I didn't get it.
The smaller animals with the horns and the really fucked up eyes, I think they are the greatest of all time. I don't know what we're going to name them, but I want to have a lot of them.
You're right. That's good. That's good. It's really good.
You didn't even crack a smile.
I wasn't.
Seriously, I was thinking about it. I was like, imagine you invented batter frying. Like, that would be amazing. And also, you would die so soon.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the more I think about it, the more from deeply unpleasant ways. Like, the first person who probably invented it died, and like nobody else did it for a long time afterward. Because they're like, no, that shit is cursed. But it must have been good. Hello, everyone! Welcome. The Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's not afraid to say the truth that everyone else is too scared to say. Namely, in mid-2008, actor Mickey Rourke and actress and comedian Jane Lynch did date for about 6 weeks. Nobody wants to talk about it. They both deny it, but it happened. It didn't happen. She's gay. He's Mickey Rourke. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 655.
655. So even I think we're close to that one episode now.
Yeah, we're pretty close.
The not too long ago, Mabim Bam had their 666 episode. It was fine. Like they talked about, they were really hyped up about it because apparently they have genuinely skipped certain numbers that they thought were too obnoxious. I think they skipped 420 and stuff like that because they just thought it was going to be too much of a deal, but they did that one. Or maybe they were joking about that. I don't know. Those boys have a very dry sense of humor sometimes. But they did 666. But yeah, it was just a couple of jokes up front. That was just a normal episode. Anyway, if you're just joining us, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People sometimes like to write into that email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com with stuff. Whatever. We don't care. The hat cares. The hat magically forwards it to us. We read them. We talk about them. We don't do that a lot. But technically, it's the premise upon which we hang the podcast. So what has it been? 9 days? I'm losing track of when we're recording.
It's been a little
over. We did a Tuesday, and this one's actually a Thursday. So, how have your 9 days been?
Well, we watched Haunted Mansion.
So did we. Let's put a pin in that. We'll get to that.
Okay.
We watched that last night. I have things to say.
We watched it last night.
We'll get back to it. Well, it did. I mean, it literally dropped yesterday, so yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Anything else? You're still on vacation until tomorrow or do you have another week? I lose track.
Well, okay. So technically things don't start until Monday, but the information about the course, your textbook and all that is available on the Friday before. So I often go ahead and start the Friday before just to get ahead started.
So in your world, you're starting again tomorrow.
But this is not regular course stuff. So there's
no.
I mean, what I'm going to see tomorrow is kind of how the schedule is going to go, basically. And then I'll have to interact with the people who are handling my practicum and let them know. And in an interaction between me and the course room and maybe some other information and them, I'll figure out hopefully what a fairly regular schedule for the next 10 weeks is going to be. In the last 9 days, since I talked to you last, there has been a lot of interaction with the people I'm going to be working with. And there's been a lot of stuff going on with that. And that's actually taken up quite a bit of, time. So, you know, really the only thing to speak of that I've done was watch this movie last night, because most of what I've been doing is kind of still getting prepared for this. And, you know, Abby and I, we do stuff together all the time that isn't anything that anybody would be interested in hearing about, shows we watch and stuff. I think about the only movie we've watched that was worth commenting on is Haunted Mansion last night. So I don't really have much else to talk about. What about you?
I have been living my worst life.
Oh.
If I can convey to any of you out there, one piece of advice that you should take with you, it's that if you have spent the bulk of your life on an SSRI and found it to work quite well, and then you're like, I don't know if it's working as well as it used to, fucking stick with it, because tapering off that son of a bitch is one of the worst things you're gonna go through.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I was hoping it would go more smoothly. Multiple meltdowns, one of them in public. I mean, I'll put it this way. My new shit, the Lexapro or whatever, which I am now on the half dose. Saturday will be my first day on the full dose. Unless the Lexapro like makes me suicidal or like makes my dick fall off or something, I'm definitely going to stick with it because I am unwilling to go through the change again. I don't know at this point. Maybe it'll be really awesome, but at this point I find it hard to believe it will be so good that it will have been worth it.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Just been awful.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's living back in the days of being unmedicated, which was crazy ass time in my life. Except now I'm in a middle-aged body.
So you don't anticipate when you're up to the dose that it's actually going to be an improvement. You don't anticipate that, or
I don't know. The problem is there are variety of, I believed it wasn't necessarily working as well because I was having more of these sort of swings and more anxiety and more depression.
No.
I think it's a very hard thing to gauge for yourself unless it's a very drastic thing, and this was definitely not a drastic thing. And simultaneously, there are other factors at play that are also changing.
Mm.
And it could have just been that. In my head right now, which my head is not good right now, so don't take that word for it, I'm betting there's not going to be a lot of difference. I'm betting it'll be, which will be fine, but it will have rendered all of this kind of silly to have done. We'll see. It's still early. Today is good so far, but I think today's good because nothing has gone wrong.
Oh.
Because that's how it works. That's how it worked before my medication days, is it just takes one thing to go wrong and suddenly everything is going wrong in my brain.
I hear you.
And today it's gone pretty smooth, and it could have gone wrong. I had to take the car into the mechanic. It could have gone wrong. Didn't go wrong. So I'm doing pretty good so far. Also, I know I'm not diagnosed as bipolar, but I also know it runs in my family and we have a tendency for it. And my niece is diagnosed with it. And also that I have these constant cycles of mood. So take all it with a grain of salt when I say, I think today I'm on one of my manic days. So we'll see.
Can I ask you a question about that diagnosis?
I would imagine. I mean, I don't... Not only do we speak the same language, you have had special training.
I know, but I don't want to.
That should help.
I don't want to. You're talking about your mental health, and that's your prerogative to do. And I don't want to ask a question.
Okay. I will make the caveat. I may not answer and instead say, fuck you.
Fair enough.
But to be fair, that is literally true of any question you will ever ask.
Right. The question is, so do you? How would you feel if you received a diagnosis of bipolar? Would that help you in any way, harm you in any way, or it doesn't matter?
I think the answer for me specifically is I don't think it would have a qualitative impact. That's not the right word. I don't think it would have a normative. I don't think it would be a good or bad thing. It would be a thing. Because I'm not in a position where I'm trying to get medical professionals to say I have bipolar. And that's the thing. People are like, I believe I have this condition. And all my healthcare professionals don't. And that's a problem for me. That's not where I am at all. I definitely think my primary issue is anxiety. I also don't think I'm not sure I have clinical depression, although I definitely have depressive episodes. I also think there is a bit of there has to be something of an arbitrary boundary line. And generalized anxiety disorder is a diagnosis. Clinical depression is a diagnosis. Bipolar disorder is a diagnosis. They all have varying magnitudes, and they also have a lot of overlapping symptoms. And so the point at which, this guy's depressed, but this guy has anxiety, and this guy has bipolar. Like, there are definitely things, but a lot of it is sort of, are you more of this or are you more of this, in your opinion, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, there's also
a lot of these meds, not all of them, but a lot of these meds sort of treat all of them. Mm. And some have been shown to work a little better if this is more your thing, a little better if this is so.
Well, the reason I ask is because it's actually a point of ethical concern for therapists, whether or not they should, in all cases, diagnose. Because, of course, some people will welcome a diagnosis because it helps them contextualize what's going on with them. It helps them if they feel like when they can name it, if they've got some command or agency over it, or they, you know, they've got a goal, you know, they can have a treatment goal or whatever. But sometimes it helps them relate, find a community of like-minded people who have the same problem. So some people welcome the diagnosis for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And other people, for other people, it's very stigmatizing, and it's going to cause them harm for you to do it, for you to diagnose them. And so it's like, there's some ethical concerns about whether you shouldn't do that, even if they have the symptoms, because of how society is going to respond and what the consequences is going to will be. And of course, some people don't care either way. But so that's why I asked. I wanted to know.
With that context, I can answer you much better.
Oh, okay. Maybe I should have explained that up front.
Outside of the ability to be prescribed certain medications to treat my mental health issues, I personally do not give a shit about what the diagnosis is.
Well, okay.
And in fact, I encourage other people. They're like, I'm trying really hard. And here's why. Here's why. Because outside of medication, you can treat yourself for any condition at any time and see how it works. So I had a friend who they're like, I have ADHD and I cannot get a doctor to say it. And I'm like, that sucks. In that you need that diagnosis to get medication to help. However, you can just right now start doing things that people with ADHD do to help themselves. That's free. And also you can do it. And if you're like, this doesn't work for me, you can stop doing it. And this applies to so many things, including non-mental health things, like being on the autism spectrum. Like, there are habits and techniques that people with autism use to help interact with the world better. And you can, if you're like, I wonder if I'm like that, you can try those out and see if they help you. And I'm here to tell you, there are a variety of techniques from a variety of diagnoses that I do make use of, because I read it one time and I was like, that sounds like that might help me in a situation. And so I tried it, and sometimes it did. And so the diagnosis to me is purely the stamp I need to get my drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, I think personally, I find it's useful to talk about. I want people to know, like, I have an actual clinical mental illness. Please keep this in mind when dealing with me. But outside of that, I think the diagnosis in some ways is almost harmful, because it's setting boundaries on me. And in terms of non-drug based treatments, the world should be my oyster. Like, I should try, as long as it's not a safety concern, I should try whatever if I think it's going to work, or if my therapist thinks it might work.
So there are many therapists who they don't really like the diagnose and treat model in general. They think it's overly simplistic. They think it, for example, you were saying that it puts a boundary around people. Sometimes they object to the stigma so much, they think, well, one way to get rid of the stigma is just to get rid of this whole thing. But as you were saying, the diagnosis is usually what is used to justify important medication. So then the question becomes, well, we want people to get medication that they need. So how do we do that if we get rid of this diagnostic regimen that is maybe more culturally defined and maybe more arbitrarily defined that's the biggest thing, right? That our whole diagnostic regimen is about judging people as being abnormal when there's nothing wrong with them, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the thought is, well, let's just not do that. Let's take one case at a time. Right. And we'll help a person. And if it looks like they might benefit from medication, we'll just give them some medication. We don't have to go through this, all this rigmarole. And some of them would point out that there's a bureaucracy around this too, right? Like insurance companies, before they'll pay for a medication, they want a diagnosis, right? So that's why we can't just get rid of that stuff, because the government wants it, insurance companies want it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So given all that context, what are your thoughts? Do you think diagnosis is valuable, and we should keep, maybe instead of getting rid of it, we should start to with the cultural consciousness, try to sharpen it so it's better, or should we get rid of it and it, because it's more trouble than it's worth and it's never not going to have cultural baggage, and just do what I was suggested before, where a counselor is just free to suggest or prescribe medication as they see fit without having to have a diagnosis.
I think diagnosis of mental illness issues and actually diagnosis of physical illness issues, diagnosis in general. So I guess what you originally asked me, so I just did a little loop to loop of nothing, is necessary.
Okay.
In the same way that accessibility laws are necessary, in the same way that welfare laws are necessary. It's an issue of scale of the society. In a perfect world, we would all go to the person doing the thing and we'd have a talk. And it could be, you know what, I've talked to you in your situation and it seems like you might benefit from this drug. Or I've talked to you in your situation and it seems like you really don't have the money to survive. So here's some stuff. Or I've talked to you in the situation and it sounds like you really need this kind of assistance. So we're going to give it to you. And that would be great. That doesn't scale to the level we're living at now. So you have to a degree, create some things like, okay, everybody's different and this person could be making X amount per year and this person is making X amount per year, but their needs and their things don't match up. So this person actually is doing okay and this person is really hurting and needs help. But generally speaking, most people making X need help. So we're going to say, if you are making X per year, you get help.
Right.
And some people aren't going to need it, still might get it. Some people might need it, can't get it. And that sucks. But we kind of have to have a point, because we cannot have a long, ideally series of conversations with each individual about it. And sure. The same way with, like, you know what would be perfect is if we could sit down for a long time and discuss different medication. I mean, in the same way that, like, in a perfect world, also prescriptions wouldn't be necessary, because we could just educate people and we could talk about it and we could give them access as needed and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
But we have to have these rules, and insurance makes the same thing. Liability makes the same thing. Yeah. Sometimes you give somebody a drug and either directly or indirectly, it causes them to die.
Yeah.
And then people are like, you fucking killed. I was going to pick a random name. And then I actually came up with the random name that the dude who killed himself from my high school on was a bad choice. You killed that dude. Give me money. Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, I mean, he knew the risk going in. And that's when you need to be able to say things like, he very specifically had a diagnosis for which this is a thing we would give. And so it's just a fluke that it fucked up for him, as opposed, or saying, you know what? You just pulled it out of your ass. That, like, you have no evidence that that was even a good idea. So fuck you, pay me. Like, you know, I mean, the whole thing. Insurance, exact same thing. They're like, I want to give him this thing. Well, it's going to cost us money. So we need some sort of assurance that it's a good idea and not just your pinky promise. Now, again, if we're in a small enough group, insurance is handled by insurance Bob. I mean, ideally, insurance isn't a thing in the small enough group. But, you know, Bob's the one who holds the resources to meet out. And if you come and you're like, Bob, this dude needs some of this, he's like, well, okay, Allison, I know you're good at this stuff, and if you say that guy needs it, okay, here. But in our world, Bob and Allison don't know each other, so, and they don't have time to know each other because there's a lot of Bobs and a lot of Allisons. So I think it's necessary. I don't know that it's good or, I mean, it is less than ideal, but I think it's what you get when you're living in a world of this size.
Well, I find diagnosis, the whole, for one thing, the practice of diagnosis has evolved, I think, in very positive ways. For example, nowadays, you're not even supposed to think about diagnosing someone or reaching for the DSM at all unless they're in distress. So you're not deciding. You're not looking at them and saying, oh, you're sick. You know, you need this help. They're deciding.
Right? I mean, I am, but that's why I'm not a professional.
And that's a huge, it didn't used to be like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It used to be that the diagnostic guidance could allow you to just see a person out on the street doing something you didn't like and, oh, that person's sick. But no, now it's got
danger
to be
to themselves or others.
Sure, they have to be in distress. Behavior, if it's like really out of character for them and it's clearly bothering them, even though they would say they're not in distress, you know, like some schizophrenic or psychotic symptoms, obviously, you know, the person might not say there's nothing, you know, they might say there's nothing wrong with me, but you can see there is. So there is still that a little bit, but for the most part, you can't even begin to diagnose someone unless they're coming to you and saying, hey, I have a problem. And even beyond that, they might think they have a problem, but if they don't contextualize their problem as a mental problem, let's say, in their culture, it's a spiritual problem, and they're going to go to a spiritual healer or something for it. Well, again, it's not your place to diagnose them with something and to insist they get a treatment, even though they are in distress and they know they are. They're going to go to their spiritual healer for help and probably be helped, because that's how the mind works, or maybe that's how the supernatural realm works. I don't know. That's not for me to decide or judge or push on somebody. So I think since diagnosis has evolved, I believe evolved to this better place, I think it does prove that we can get better at diagnosis and what we diagnose and when and how. And I also tend to think that people who want to just get rid of that whole thing are a little bit throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Although I do appreciate a lot of their points about being multiculturally sensitive. I think that is important, about not imposing our values on someone else and calling someone's cultural practice a mental illness or all of that. I totally agree with that.
And if we're going to establish these things, I find, and again, this is outside of health diagnosis, this goes into all sorts of categories.
It does, really. Yeah, you're right.
The biggest problem nowadays is not, I mean, it can be a problem that, like, you drew this line and I happen to be on the other side of it, even though I'm totally, like, that is a thing. But what's way worse is you drew this line and my dude is really good at, like, seeing that's the line. Here's where you are. Here's what we do. But this other dude, he really is not good at picking. Like, it's the lack of consistent enforcement of said boundaries. What I find much more often is not that, like, oh, my doctor says I have this but I don't really have it or whatever. It's much more this doctor says this thing and that doctor says another thing, and it involves giving me drugs, so
yeah
they should be on the same page. And we literally have laws and things in place. We literally have pages for them to be on the same one of. So, like, in theory, this should be good. But yeah,
well, actually, I've been pretty impressed because you know, I get to see not just how clinical mental health counselors do things, but how psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers, and not only are the social workers mostly on the same page and the psychologists and psychiatrists, but all of us who are in this profession are pretty much on the same page. Like, all of our codes of ethics seem the same. A lot of the standards for how the best practices and standards are exactly the same. So, I mean, I think I think the people,
all the stuff on the paper matches up.
Yeah. Like I'm said, there are pages. No. I know. I realize that, but I think it's good that you were saying there are actual pages for them to be on the same one. It's good those pages are out there. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think those best practices, I think it's great that all of these people who work in this and they come from various backgrounds and they work in the same kind of industry, that they've often gotten together and shared information in a way where there's this, you know, finite set of best practices that anyone can look at and learn. Now, as you say, there's still going to be great variation and that could be a problem, but at least, like I say, at least those pages are out there, and the ones that I've seen are very sensible. I think they're correct. They're definitely the kind of thing that I want to conform to as a professional. And I think people who aren't, who don't have degrees or whatever, but still do this kind of work can benefit from looking at this stuff and trying to meet these, what I think are reasonable standards. But yeah, you're right. There is a lot of variability out there, but there's nothing you can do about that, I don't think. I mean, that's just how it's going to be.
Other than increased regulation and and again, at scale, corruption exists and all that. I do want to touch on a thing that you alluded to, but I do want to make it clear because, again, my answer to your earlier questions were very specific to me.
Sure, and that's what I
am
them to
aware
be.
That there can be a tremendous amount of importance in diagnosis outside of drugs for some people, especially in a mental health situation, because if I don't have a diagnosis, then it's like maybe some of it's just my imagination. Maybe I just have the crazies. Everybody around me is like, come on, it's not a real thing. You just like to get pissy sometimes and stuff like that. But now I could be like, no, I have a thing. A doctor told me I have a thing. It's true. So fuck you, it's real. And fuck you can also be referring to your own inner voice saying, I don't know if it's real. So I do understand the importance of that. And as I said, I the fact that we determined I had a mental health issue and is still important to me, and I still want people to know that. I guess my justification nowadays is like, a grown-up makes me take drugs for it, so you know it's real. But like which drugs and why.
And of course, the most important point is that when you had that medication, it helped you. You believed that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, originally it wasn't prescription meds. Because when it came to a head the first time, I was dating a very woo-woo young lady. And so she got me into St. John's Wort. And St. John's Wort worked real well in a very similar way to how Paxil eventually worked. It just eventually stopped working.
Oh.
And so I got on Paxil. And Paxil was great for 15 years or so. And then it wasn't working as well. And again, usually with these things, that's part of why I feel weird about this one. I'm the one who decided this time I'm not sure it's working as well. Literally every other time has been outside forces, and specifically disparate outside forces.
Right.
If one person is like, you've been a pissy bitch, maybe they suck. But if like eight people who don't know each other are like, you've been a pissy bitch, probably means I've been a pissy bitch. And so that was what happened for me to increase the dosage of my Paxil. And then, but this one is all me. Nobody's been complaining. So I don't know, but we'll see. I definitely have found that stuff work. I'm still nervous about what it's going to look like now, because literally the majority of my life I've been on Paxil. So I have a much clearer image of what I'm like on Paxil than not. So I'm not sure now. But I did also in the tapering off of this, luckily this was much shorter, had some really bad physical symptoms that I recognized, because they are symptoms that I have gotten if I've ever, and it's very rarely happened, missed my meds completely for multiple days in a row.
Right.
I had similar symptoms. So
right,
that's how I do.
Right.
And and I'm going to avoid a lot of detail here for your sake, but I have been enjoying that tapering it off, at least temporarily, alleviates some side effects that are not severe, but ones that I decided long ago to just live with. So I've been enjoying not having those side effects for a precious week or two until I'm sure they come back, because I mean, I know everybody responds differently and I want to have hope, but the truth is SSRIs all have the same sort of suite of side effects. And so I feel like I'm probably going to end up in the same spot. And my experience with this stuff has been very minimal. Usually I have pretty serious side effects for the first few weeks and then they sort of go away, but they're sort of low level all the time. So you're moving very slow. So I don't know how much of this you're picking up.
You froze for a second there. Yeah.
All right. Well, I've been talking a lot. So how much of that did you catch?
I missed only about the last 20 seconds, maybe.
That was the good part. I was saying that SSRIs, people react differently to different ones, and so I'm a little hopeful, but they all kind of have the same suite of side effects.
Right.
And so odds are decent that whatever side effects I experience from this one are going to be not super dissimilar from the side effects I experienced before. Different things at different levels, maybe, but and for me, the side effects in the past, again, St. John's wort and the Paxil, were sort of moderate to severe in the first few weeks and then tapered off to very little and definitely what I could live with. So I'm hoping/guessing that'll happen again, and if it doesn't, then I need to switch. But it is nice that I'm now in a place where, like, the little low level ones aren't even there, because I'm kind of hitting a point where I'm hardly taking any, and so that's been fun. All right, but let's get to the important stuff. Disney's Haunted Mansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm gonna have the same response I've had to so many movies lately. So mine's going to be simple. So let's just start with you. What did you think?
I thought it was pretty bad. I'm a fan of the ride.
Yeah.
I think the ride's pretty fun. And so I would really love for there to be a really good Haunted Mansion movie. So I feel like I'm going to judge it more harshly than other people. So I just want to put context on that, but it was, it wasn't good. I mean, there wasn't, I thought the young actor, the boy, I don't remember his name. I'm very sad for him because he seems really talented. And I think this was his first movie, and that's too bad because he's really, really good.
Shit to work with. We Trish and I specifically talked about that. I'm like, I don't think it's him.
No,
the character sucks. Like, they aren't giving, not the character's not a bad person. The character was written very poorly. And I'm I get the sense that he's a good actor.
Yeah, I do too.
But they gave him like nothing to work
with. I really hope to see him in other things because he seems really good. And to be fair, the rest of the cast, very talented cast. But, the script was just no good at all. And I did wonder if maybe a better script was written and then it was just directed and edited poorly. I don't know, but I wouldn't recommend it to anybody really. There's nothing redeemable in it, I don't think. I mean, I've seen worse movies, but I think I had hopes that this would be better, and it just...
That'll get you. I didn't have a lot of hope. I do think I didn't dislike it as much as you or as much as Trish. Here's the capsule review. It's a Red Notice. It's another Red Notice.
It did feel that way, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to hire really popular, well-known, good actors. Okay, good is sometimes a stretch. But in this case, I deeply love and admire basically every non-Owen Wilson actor in this film. Even the really short cameos, and there are some mind-bogglingly short and pointless cameos.
Yeah.
We had Winona Ryder is in this movie performing a role, and I have never said this about any professional role in my life, I could do at the same level. Not because I'm as good as Winona Ryder. I am not. But because that is how little effort this role took.
Oh, yeah.
Trish thinks the same is true of Dan Levy. And to be fair, he had like two lines.
Yeah.
But I still feel like he gave a little of himself in there. But Winona Ryder could have been a bot. I mean.
Maybe she was. Maybe there was a deep fake. I don't know.
But I really admire it. But it's they're like, we're going to get a bunch of big name actors. We're going to throw a shit ton of movie at it. I mean, money at it. We're going to just rain down CGI over everything. And people will watch. And I don't think they're wrong. No, the script was a disaster. It's the kind of movie that if it wasn't these people, I mean, first of all, if it wasn't this cast, I probably wouldn't have bothered to check it out. But also, if it wasn't this cast, I would have hated it. And I didn't hate it. I was mildly entertained. It was longer than I wanted it to be. Although, to be fair, we thought about it. Like, we talked a lot about it afterward. Not in a good way. There was a lot of stuff that it needed more of, and a lot of stuff it needed less of. So 2 hours might have been an appropriate length if they had just prioritized better.
That's what I think, too. That's what I think, too.
It probably was visually cooler on a big screen. It wasn't visually bad. Some of it was kind of cool. But it's again, just the most CGI. And you know, it's a haunted mansion movie. You kind of need that, but you didn't need as much of it or as blatant of it. It was only mildly offensive, but it was offensive a couple of times, including words that came out of Lakeith Stanfield's mouth. There are like one or two lines from this that I'm like, Lakeith Stanfield is arguably my favorite actor working today.
Oh,
I love him. I do not consider, I have only ever seen, I guess now, two performances that I did not consider absolutely stellar. One was this, and one was before I sort of knew who he was. He was in the live action adaptation of Death Note. And as somebody who didn't watch the anime, I still thought that movie sucked. And his was a pointless character that anybody could have done that part. I didn't give a shit. It wasn't that great, but there was nothing to work with. Whatever. Everything else I've seen that man do is fucking amazing. I adore him. He uttered words that I don't care how much he was paid, I lost some respect for him for the fact that he was willing to say it and have it filmed and put on the screen.
Just as a side note, have you seen Changeling? He's in that.
There are so many movies named Changeling.
Oh, this is a series. It's a new series.
No, I haven't heard of this.
Yeah, he's pretty good in it. You should maybe look it up. I think it's not, really? It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I didn't know if you'd seen him.
No, because I love him. If he's in something, I want to see it.
Yeah, I think he's really good.
He's even been in movies that I didn't think were very good, but I still loved him in it.
Yeah.
The Harder They Fall was a huge heartbreaker of a film. The Harder They Fall was so excited for it. It has amazing people in it. They give amazing performances. It's just not that interesting. It's kind of a Red Notice also. It's just a Red Notice that cast a whole bunch of black people, so I was very excited. But yeah, I'm just gonna say it because I'm really bothered by this. There's a point in this movie where he is sort of panically, there's a ghost going on, and he is giving a sort of panic, trying to placate the ghost thing. And he says, Ghost Bay. Can I call you Ghost Bay? And I was just like, that's the worst thing that's ever come out of your mouth.
And it's a female ghost, right? It's like a...
Yeah, it was a female ghost.
Yeah.
Because
that's part of it, a little bit.
It's just dumb. It's just dumb. And also, like...
It was weird, for sure.
Offensive in the way that, like, if his character had been a white guy, they never would have had him say that line. I am confident. And there are weird... Disney likes to try and do this, be like, we're up on the culture. And there's a line that isn't terrible, except for the fact that I'm like, it's Disney, so I'm sure they're patting themselves on the back, where he actually says, I never thought I would ever say this, but if we're not back in 2 hours, call the police. And I'm like, see, you can make a nod to the politics, but you didn't technically say anything that could get you in trouble if they asked you later. But
it seemed like a big ad for the ride, odd enough. Like this big advertisement for the ride. That's weird.
It had some references in it, some of which were fun, and at least one of which was real fun because it seemed obscure, but Trish and I literally caught it in the same second. And I know because we both out loud were like, oh. And it's, you'll know, I think I said Tiffany Haddish's chair.
Yeah. Right.
I love that. I love that.
It was pretty good. Honestly,
as that's happening, I was like, oh, it's the, and then I hear Trish go, oh, and I was like, yes. And then I'm sure there were more references I wouldn't get.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, when Tiffany Haddish first showed up, I thought the film started to just get a little more interesting at that point, and then not.
Yeah. Well, the movie, the script is clearly, I don't even want to say individual scenes, individual lines from other scripts that somebody just stuck together, because there is not a lot of cause and effect. There is not a lot of setup and payoff. There's cause.
Yeah.
There's setup. There's effect that has no relation to any cause that has happened. And this is what bugged me, there is so much payoff for which there was no setup. So much. But it's just like things you have in the movie. We had a lot of emotional beats that we never set up.
We never earned.
Relationship established, like moments where they're like, no, because you really helped me and made me a better. I'm like, no, they didn't. I have literally watched the entire time you have known them, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, they never earned any of those moments at all.
And so many bits that I'm like, somebody wrote this down because these are things that happen in movies, but they're tied to other bits that didn't happen in this movie.
You mean as if an AI wrote the script? That's what it
very much like. Very much. I was gonna make a ChatGPT joke to start with, in fact, but I feel like it's people are doing that everywhere. But it very much has that feel. We also determined either Danny DeVito or Owen Wilson's character. Those are one. They filled the same role. We could have just ditched one of them 100% and the movie would have been unchanged, except a little less busy. And I would take Danny DeVito, partially because if you asked me to choose between Danny DeVito and Owen Wilson, Danny DeVito all day, every day. But also, Danny DeVito's character was fun because it was the ways in which it was similar and not similar to his character on Always Sunny in Philadelphia are hilarious. Like, because in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, he's one of the most reprehensible monsters out there. And this was like, what if we made it Disney'd him so he's not bad, but he's still kind of that guy in a way that was just, and don't get me wrong, Danny DeVito has range. I'm not accusing him of being one note on this, but it was just the way he chose to do it was in some ways very similar, in some ways different. And it just was really sort of fun to watch that aspect of it for me. Literally, I was just complaining about the fact that I can never get her name all the time. Rosario Dawson. Mm-hmm. Her name leaves me constantly. She's really huge right now. She's having a moment, but she's also been around for decades. I think she's very good. I'm a very big fan. I lose her name all the time. And it's a very distinctive name. But Rosario Dawson, great job. Didn't give her a ton to work with. Jamie Lee Curtis, marvelous. But just in general, these people, what I tried to do was be like, I'll bet you got paid well. And good on you. I mean, that's fine. Because that's all I can say. Hasan Minhaj is in this. And again, a role that didn't need to be Hasan Minhaj. Could have been me or William or anybody who's not like actively afraid of cameras. There's just a bunch of because it's a cameo and it's fun and whatever, but like didn't fucking matter. It wasn't until afterwards Trish was like, this doesn't make any sense, and I said, what? And so we went through the explanation. And I thought it was fine. I was like, yeah. And she's saying, she's like, so this guy does. And I'm like, yeah, and then this and this. And then she's like, and then this. And I'm like, yeah. And so if this happens, then this happens. I don't know why, though. We never explained why. Like, we explained the backstory of our villain. Mm-hmm. And we explained what our villain's plan is. Mm-hmm. We did not explain how our villain's backstory led to him being able to do that plan.
Yeah, that's like one thing.
Why that plan is possible. Yeah. And it's not. It's one of those things that could have been propped up very easily with a MacGuffin or two. But they didn't bother. I mean, MacGuffin, you can get away. I mean, look at the Fast and Furious. Most of their shit is just random MacGuffins that make it hold together better than this. Also, I'm just going to throw this out of there. The main villain is voiced by Jared Leto. And it's 100% I Am Groot situation. Like, if you didn't see it in the credits, you wouldn't know it was Jared Leto.
Nope.
And it doesn't matter at all that it's Jared Leto.
Does not.
And also, it's not physically Jared Leto because our villain is wholly CGI. So like it's a I Am Groot. It's absolutely a I Am Groot, except just a hunch. He probably didn't put as much of his heart and soul into it, because good or bad, necessary or not, Vin Diesel is like way into being Groot and like giving his all. He insisted on doing every language of I Am Groot. Like, you don't normally do that kind of shit, but he learned how to say I Am Groot in every language the movie came out in and did a separate performance for each one, because like it was a thing for him. I do not believe that is probably the case for Jared Leto.
Probably not.
But you could speak to this, and I'm guessing I now know my answer given your reaction. Is there anything in Haunted Mansion, the ride lore, that helps any of this?
No.
Okay.
So certain parts of the ride became popular sort of by themselves. The villain, for example, that part of the ride or that animatronic in the ride sort
I assumed it has such a distinctive, this is a dude from the Haunted Mansion look, that I assumed it probably is in there somewhere.
Right. So people latched onto this character from the ride and, you know, made up lore about that character. Very popular character in the ride. And, you know, some of the other things they showed directly from the ride only had enough story. I mean, they didn't develop any of those characters in the movie. They only had enough story that you get from the ride. Right. So, you know, if any of the stuff in the film relates to any of the earlier written lore or the lore that they kind of put together for the ride, it's just coincidental. Whatever you get from the ride itself, and maybe some from things fans of the ride have made up, that's in the movie. But I don't think any reference is made to anything that like the Imagineers would have put together beforehand or talked about beforehand or anything like that.
Yeah. And the whole, all the references I knew were physical and visual.
Sure. And, you know, the whole backstory of the mansion and of that particular character and all of that, that was all, I don't think that's ever been part of the ride. I think they made it all up for the film so that they could take all of these elements in the ride, which is notoriously fractured, right? I mean, that's a popular thing to say.
Different
right, guys, different people creating different things, and then they'd update it. So there's no through line with the ride at all. And so I think they thought, well, let's try to make one. And the one they came up with had some merit, I thought, just from a storytelling standpoint. But I mean, it was too many things you're trying to force together without really any craft, too many characters, to be honest. They didn't, you know, they couldn't.
No, absolutely.
They tried to give each character some kind of, the reason they had moments that they didn't earn was because they wanted to give everybody an arc, but the arc had like two beats in it.
And no smooth arc. Was completely ignored in between.
Right.
So our main character is very interesting. Also, the trailer gave me a very different sense of what kind of movie, and I'm not saying quality wise. Hmm. Like, I very strongly believed Lakeith Stanfield's character was a ghost hunter, like a prophet. But in fact, A, he's our POV,
kind of, yeah.
And B, his whole thing is that he doesn't believe in ghosts, at least at the start. Yeah. Like, the way they did it, I thought he was like literally the guy showing up, and I imagined he was going to unroll a leather thing that had different bits. Like, he had that look, but no, it was just his style. But he's a good example. He has some deep shit in his past that is causing him trouble. He talks about it a few times, and he gives some very emotional performances when he does. Outside of those moments, he seems like a dude who does not have any problems of that. Like, the trauma of that apparently is every moment of his waking life, only applies when he's doing a monologue about it.
Yeah,
and the rest of the time, it seems to have no impact.
Right. You seem to be, I agree. I think that's true.
And there's lots of stuff. I do love, though, there's a twist about Owen Wilson's character. Hmm. And I called it without realizing I was calling it, because I thought they did a poor job with his character in a certain way that it turned out wasn't his. Why am I worrying about spoilers for this movie? It's not worth it.
I think Owen Wilson
plays a priest who doesn't turn out to be a priest. And that's good, because I will never buy Owen Wilson as a priest. And he didn't pull it off here either. But it turns out he's not actually a priest. And I'm like, well, good on you, movie, because that was dumb. So I'm glad it turned out that was not real.
I called it by saying, why did they put him in that costume? It looks like a Halloween costume. And then later on,
oh, that's even better. I believe I just said, I am never going to buy Owen Wilson as a priest. I can't believe they did.
Yeah, that too. But his,
and to be fair, that one has a little bit of the through line, because he's a very shitty priest throughout.
Yeah, it's true.
So, but it's true. No, but then just shit that you see, like, they find the crystal ball, and I did it all myself. It wasn't me and Trish bantering. I did it to myself, and I was like, wow, that's a really big crystal ball. Beat. And then I was like, yeah, about big enough to put a human head in it, don't you think? And then there was a human head. Yeah, it's not. I mean, I was entertained. Trish wisely thought it would have been a way better movie if we'd been high. And I was like, oh, 100%. Might have been a real good time if we were high, but not, no. It was, yeah, but the one really good thing I could say for it, it has got me jonesing to reread Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom by Cory Doctorow. A marvelous sci-fi book set in a post-scarcity future in which competing factions are trying to redesign Disneyland's Haunted Mansion. It's a very good book. It's Cory Doctorow's first novel. I highly recommend it, and I want to reread it now. So, yeah.
I just don't know why they can't make a good... I mean...
Because it's not... There's no reason to. This took less effort. And I think that's less effort on behalf of the executives. And is going to make just as much money. Or at least enough money.
Well, the problem... The reason there are certain expectations is... I still think the first Pirates movie was really good. I mean, all things considered, you know, first, especially for movie based on a ride, but
and it holds up pretty well.
But the Pirates, when they made the Pirates movie, they didn't sit and worry about how close it was to the ride or whether or not people were going to have a good ride experience. You know, they didn't do that. They let storytellers come in and tell a decent story. It didn't matter if you put all the elements of the ride in there, because I just know that when they made this film, they want people to watch it. And then when they go ride the ride, it's like, oh, yeah, that scene. Oh, yeah, that scene. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, they just basically took everything that's in the ride and put it in the movie, which that's not the way to do it at all. At all. It's just not. And it was going to be a disaster from go if that was what their idea was. But
well, the prevailing theory, and to be fair, there's a lot of evidence to back this up, is that the best marketing tool you have these days is nostalgia and references. And the dopamine hits that go off where people are like, I know that thing. And to be fair, those were the funnest parts for me, which speaks to how bad the movie was. But the parts where I was like, oh, that's the thing from the thing. Yeah. And I mean, then they do it. That's how the new Spider-Man did. That's how the new Flash did. I mean, it's like, oh, remember this guy? He's back for no reason. And everybody's like, I remember that guy. And to a degree, that's why sequels and reboots are the thing. And it's also why I'm tired of them. And I don't want even the best movies out there. I'm like, and let's not have another one.
It's also why if you don't, it's also why this is what an AI movie would look like. It is exactly what an AI movie would look like. Exactly.
But in the counterpoint, let me talk to you about a movie that is probably worse than this one, but I do recommend it because it's fun. And in fact, I saw it a couple of weeks ago and I forgot to put it on my list.
Oh,
so I didn't talk about it, but right. Trish found it a while ago and it had the wildest trailer. So it was on our radar and it's on Hulu. If people want the Hulu, it's called The Devil Conspiracy.
Ooh.
And it's nuts. I think I actually read some reviews on it. And I think one of the best ways to sum this up, but unfortunately, I can't promise you because I never saw these movies. But somebody said basically, if you wanted biblical mythology and horror done with the level of care that the National Treasure movies take with American history.
Oh, wow.
Like, this is a movie about Lucifer and the Archangel Michael, and it makes no sense if you've ever heard of either of those characters before. Okay. Like, it's crazy. And it's, I mean, I don't even know. I'm trying to give the premise exactly. So Satanists have a plan to bring about to bring Lucifer back to Earth that involves the Shroud of Turin. And when they go get it, they kill a priest, and the priest prays to the Archangel Michael, and so the Archangel Michael possesses his body and goes around fixing things. He's not the main character. The main character is a woman who didn't really believe in all this, but then she's kidnapped by the Satanists for part of their plans and hijinks ensue. It is very much an action horror film. But it's just silly, like not on purpose, but like nothing anybody does makes any sense. Like we actually see the Archangel Michael take Lucifer to hell in the beginning, and Lucifer is chained to a rock because they put chains on him, and then Michael stuck his sword in a rock that like holds the chain in place, and Lucifer can't pull it out. And this isn't too, I mean, it's a little weird because I'm like, isn't he going to need that? But it's weird because it becomes a big plot point that Michael needs his sword in other things later. And I'm like, you spent thousands of years with it stuck in there. And also, as the story progresses, we have a point in the plot at which nothing happens and suddenly Lucifer can pull the chains at the sword out. But he can't leave, so nothing really changed, but it was a big deal. Also, in that opening scene where Lucifer gets dragged down there, Lucifer says, "Release me!" And Michael's like, "Say you're sorry. And come back and be nice."
Say you're sorry.
That's not how he says it. But he literally is like, if you say you're sorry and come back and be a good angel, okay. And Lucifer's like, I think Lucifer literally says, better to be, to rule in hell than be a slave in heaven. And I'm like, you've been here for 5 minutes. You're chained to a rock. What are you talking about? But like, every single line in that conversation makes no sense. Also, we are introduced to our atheist female protagonist, who is arguably our POV for this, because she is in Italy studying art history, and she goes to talk to her professor, who has denied her thesis topic. Mm. And her thesis topic is that all the great artists of the Renaissance who made all the religious stuff didn't actually believe in God and the devil.
Hmm.
She offers no evidence that I know of for this. And in case you missed it the first time, she's an art history major. Why would this be an art history topic? And how would you prove it unless you had writings where Michelangelo was like, yeah, this, we know this is bullshit, right? And there's no evidence in this movie that that is the case. Also, we have two primary tent poles of the bad guys. And one is this scary monster dude who actually has some, if not scriptural, like apocryphal evidence. I looked him up later. He doesn't have a real name. He has like a title, but it's a real thing from, I think, the Apocrypha or whatever. And the other one, who is named Liz. And like, she's old and she's scary and she does badass stuff. And her name is Liz. And I don't know who she is. And we never find out. Like, at first I was like, oh, she's secretly a demon. And then later I'm like, no, I think she's a person. And we keep doing it like, you can call me Liz. But like, we never find out if that's a pseudonym or short for something. She's just Liz.
Mm.
So I don't know why she's Liz, or she's, or even while she's there, like she acts like she's like a supernatural evil thing, but she might just be an old lady who like managed to be the longest living Satanist. So she like, she got a seniority promotion kind of thing. I don't know. And she doesn't even get a last name. Like her name, she's a major character in this movie.
Mm.
And her name is Liz. Also, I mean, just so many things about our heroine, our female lead goes into the thing that has the Shroud of Turin, and she goes to look at this really cool sculpture that's one of those, you know how movies like to have a piece of art that coincidentally looks exactly like a thing that's also in the movie. the classic one is, I inherited this house and here's my great great grandmother and she looks exactly like I do. But this one is a sculpture that somebody did of Michael putting down Lucifer, and it looks an awful lot like what we saw in the beginning. But anyway, she spends hours sketching this. It's not that complicated. And Liz breaks in and steals the sword off of the sculpture, and it's a big ass sword. She does use it to help steal the Shroud of Turin, which is the point, but like, she uses it in a way that she could have used any piece of long metal. Like, the sword is nothing. Like, we make a big thing. It's a totally different part of the museum, and she goes specifically there to steal it. And this is important, because otherwise she would never have seen what's-her-name. So it's a really good thing she did. But there is no reason for her to do it, and it's not the sword or anything special or compelling at all.
But she had to see this woman, so.
And how this woman, she says later, captured the essence of Lucifer, which I'm like, first of all, I saw the drawings. So don't fucking bullshit me on this. But second of all, no, she did not. At best, she captured the essence of a sculpture that someone else made.
Yeah, yeah.
That they, because it's her sketches were not impressionistic per se. They were just drawings of, I mean, of they the were competent. Thing. Yeah. So I'm like, nope. Oh, but it's good. Like, if we don't say this, she's not going to be in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to have her in the movie. And actually, at one point, I won't tell you what the solution to, well, I'm not telling you what the evil plan is, and I'm going to tell you what the solution is, because it is such a joyful experience to find out how dumb both of them are. But I will just say this. There is a moment in this movie where the Archangel Michael suddenly realizes the answer and has what I would say is like one of those aha moments that J.B. Fletcher had in every episode of Murder, She Wrote, you know, like 10 minutes before the end, where she's like, oh, of course. And his aha line is, I forgot that there are beings more powerful than me. And I'm like, did you? Archangel Michael? I feel like that's some shit that will get you fired real fast. As an archangel, you know. I'm not saying there's a ton of them, but I'm saying the ones, the maybe even just the one, that is, should you never should like be like, oh yeah,
but I forgot about that.
Like I laughed out loud when that line came. I'm like, what? How? No. What? No.
That's kind of his whole thing,
right?
To know that, and to punish the other angels who seem to have forgotten.
Like, I mean, that was a whole bit at the beginning, sort of. Yeah. And there's a little, I mean, it's I recommend it. It is a fun time. It is not a good movie, but it is a fun time. And it is competently shot, and it's filmed in Romania, which means it costs very little, but also means it's very pretty.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It gets filmed there. In Prague and all that, and Romania, yeah, all the time, because it's very cheap, but also it's real nice looking. And yeah, it is. But yeah, it's dumb. It's dumb, but it's a fun time. So I would recommend The Devil Conspiracy. All right. I had another thing, I think, still on. Oh, I had two things on the list. But okay, what? No, it's on. Okay. That's it. So we're going to need to wrap up here. I'm gonna end on one thing, the episode, because it's a very small thing. So thank you for listening. Sorry we actually have an email. We didn't get to it because, I mean, it's mostly the fault of mental health and the Haunted Mansion, which is fair. I find most things in life can be blamed on one of those.
Probably.
Now, if I was clever, I'd come up with some sort of synergy term to make the title, like The Haunted Mind or mental mansion. Then we're just gonna go big enough for a human head. That seems like a fair emblem from the episode. Please listen again next week, because why else are we doing this? Don't answer that. Please write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. It's always weird to say that on an episode where we didn't get to it in email, but we really want and need those emails, so please do it. Also, take care of your mental health. Don't listen to anything we've said, because I'm a fuckwit, and William's not officially anything yet, so you can't trust him for at least 10 more weeks. Although, if it was me, I wouldn't trust him. I haven't been trusting William for years, and it's served me well so far. Go to the blog, Magical Talking Hat. Have you seen any of these movies? What are your thoughts on them? Do you have any mental health stuff? I feel like we got into some cool discussion there that could continue on the blog. Go to Aether Theater, grab William's things. Sorry, aethertheater.gov. And go to smashwords.com and grab my book. It's called Odd Wings. And listen next week. All right, I'm gonna end on something very depressing.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. Just realized the other day, so I'm in a store. I don't want to name drop because I can't remember which store it was, but I was in a store and it was playing music, and they played Land of Confusion, the original. That's Genesis. It wasn't Phil Collins solo. That was Genesis one.
I think it was Genesis. Yeah, because that was with the puppets and stuff in the video.
The whole band was involved. I think so. Yeah, you're right. Because they had puppet versions of Peter Gabriel and shit like that.
And the rest,
Great video. Great song. Still slaps. No notes. But it was somewhere in the 80s. We got to specify here. It was shortly before Genesis broke up. So
I think Reagan was president because he's in the video. Oh,
definitely,
because right?
he's a factor in there. Yeah, so it was somewhere between 1980 and 1988. And we all need to remember the last verse of that song, in which Phil Collins sings, "I won't be coming home tonight. My generation will put it right. We're not just making promises that we know we'll never keep." And I'm like, y'all are arguably the most famous generation for doing exactly that.
Yeah, you're right. Like, that is
generations before you may have been worse about it, but it wasn't as obvious or well known or publicized. So, yeah, Land of Confusion is officially a lie, and nothing in this world is good.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.